Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah!
We are back on the Andy Finn Show with Margot.
Hey!
How come that's not pronounced Margot?
Because my mom made it a T and...
Well, I know that's what I was trying to pronounce.
Exactly. It's French. Like, buffet is not pronounced
Buffett.
Buffet.
Actually, I sometimes pronounce it Buffett. Like, I'm thinking of going to see the Jimmy Buffet concert.
It's Buffett.
I know it is.
I know.
That's what I'm trying to point out to you. Okay, so this was the day in 1945 that Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart were married.
I love Humphrey.
Now, if we did what, you know, like Tomcat, Bacall and Bogart could become Bogart or Bocall or Boku.
Wow, that's clever.
I don't know that it is, actually. Maybe that's why they don't do it. They didn't do it back then.
Mm-hmm.
I am kind of sick of that, all that stuff.
Callgart.
Callgart, that could work.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
In any case, there was something else I wanted to cover that went... Oh, I know what it is. This is an anniversary from 1998 of a tragedy. An expelled student in Springfield, Oregon, killed two people and wounded 25 others with a semi-automatic rifle. Police discovered that he had also killed his parents before he went on this rampage. Now, this was 1998, and the kid's name will go unmentioned here. It's not somebody you'd heard of. Actually, I'll mention it only because, not because I want to make him famous, but because I want people to know that he's not famous. His name is Kipland Kinkle, and so I guess he was known as Kip Kinkle, which I guess people got confused with Kris Kringle.
Do you remember this?
Vaguely, only vaguely, which is interesting because it's only 9 years ago. But, you know, part of the, like with Dylan and Klebold from Columbine, there's a mini campaign not to ever mention their names. Because
Voldemort.
It's supposed to be about the victims. They don't want to turn these guys into heroes, and they don't want to think you can, want anybody to think you can get immortality from this. It's immorality you get from this. So Cho, the guy that did the Virginia Tech, there's kind of a mini campaign, a subtle campaign, not to use his name, not so that we don't say, oh.
Yeah, because if there was a true campaign, then that would pretty much backfire.
Yes and no. If you think about it, in baseball, in between innings, occasionally, or even during the game, actually, I mean during the game, when the television coverage is on, every so often a fan jumps out of the stands and runs around the field. Now they have to stop play, and the security guards chase them around to catch him. Well, often a young 20-year-old kid full of beer is...
When did you see me do this?
Faster. Faster than the security guards, who are also full of beer. It's just they've accumulated over the space of 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is that when they first had this happen, the cameras showed these people on camera, and that encourages more of the same. And so people said, hey, I can get on TV too, watch. And all that happened was they got thrown out of the game. So you do it in the eighth inning, because you're full of beer by then,
mm-hmm.
and you get thrown out and you don't get to see the last inning. Well, if your team's down 5-0, who cares?
Who does care?
So they've now, about 20, when this first happened, they showed it a couple of times. Then they got together and they had a campaign not to show the camera. So they always take the camera off the field and they'll put it on the announcers and say, there's an idiot running around on the field, but we are not going to show him to you because that's what he wants. And so that's a case of a concerted campaign not to do something. But it's not quite the same as saying, we don't want to use the name of the shooter, because you say, oh, you mean Cho? Oops, I used it. So you'd have to say, I don't want to use the name of the shooter, and I refuse to. So I'm never going to say the name Cho again during this show.
You just said Cho.
Again, I'm not going to. From now on.
From now on?
Achoo!
Hey, you said Cho.
No, I said achoo.
In the sound of an achoo.
Okay, we're moving on. So I want to talk about the... I don't have the heart to talk about Iraq this week. There's a lot of news on Iraq. I'll make it real quick. I will say just a minute, just a couple things, and that is the House and the Senate are trying to craft a bill, the Democrats are, and they got a standoff with the Bush administration. They met today, Monday, May 21st, and there is disappointment on both sides. The Democrats expect the president to give in some, and the president, or at least his people, his man, Josh Bolton, no relation to John Bolton, former bull in the UN China shop.
I knew that.
They expect he expected the Democrats to cave or to compromise. And both of them are right now saying they aren't compromising. So we got a little game of chicken. They're eyeball to eyeball, and they're waiting to see who blinks.
I love chicken.
Well, I like chicken, too, but this just tastes like chicken.
No, I wasn't talking about taste. I was talking about the game.
Got it.
The game of chicken.
The game of chicken. It's like the game of life, except you take it head on.
Yeah. Not funny.
Okay, so a little bit of news. Let's start on the Republican side. Rudy Giuliani clarified his position on abortion at the debates last week. He made it clear he's pro-choice. He hates abortion.
Right.
He wouldn't have one himself.
Well, he really can't.
He wouldn't have a sex change either.
Why
he just
not?
Wants to be clear about this because he's a conservative. It's those liberals that have those sex changes. Like John Edwards, you know?
John Edwards.
That vaguely beauty shop kind of guy
Joni
is what
Edwards?
They claim about. No, they're the left is up in arms about Edwards because the right continually makes comments that suggest he is either effeminate or homosexual or something. Like,
so Ann, like Little Richard?
Ann Coulter called him a faggot and then claimed she didn't or claimed it shouldn't matter. He got this $400 haircut, and he can't shake this image. Everybody's now referring to him as the man with the $400 haircut. But it's not just that he's rich and he spends money this way. They referred to him, somebody in the Republican debate referred to him as going to the beauty parlor. Now, he didn't go to a beauty parlor, first of all.
Where did he go?
The haircut came to him. That's why it cost $400.
Really?
Yes. He was busy. They came.
Did he also get a mani and a pedi?
No, they wouldn't talk about it if he did, and he probably stopped getting manis and pedis. Now, you're talking to a man who's had a mani and a pedi.
Wow, that's
and
really comfortable
I got no
of you
problem
to,
with
you know,
it.
Admit that.
My girlfriend a few years ago kind of was testing me, I think. She had
I
asked,
love tests.
She had asked other boyfriends, and they all said no, apparently. She didn't tell me this at the time. We were fairly new to dating. And she had gone for a manicure already, and she was going for another one. And she said, "Hey, would you like to go with me?" I said, "Well, no, not really." She said, "Well, I'll pay for it. Would you be willing to get a manicure and pedicure?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't see why not." She said, "You can get clear. You don't have to get a color." I said, "I hope so." And because you don't even have to get nail polish. You can
right.
get a pedicure or a manicure without getting your nail. I said, "No, I don't mind a light polish. If I'm going to do this, I might as well do it full
sure.
full bore. You know, I saw what women want. I know
yeah,
how it works.
Absolutely.
Mel Gibson can try on pantyhose and still be a man. Hey,
yeah.
I can get the manicure and pedicure.
Sure you can.
And we were sitting there, and they have these, which I didn't know, they give you these massage chairs to sit in. So I'm sitting there getting my back raked over the coals. Or raked over the massage chair, and they're working on my hands or they're working on my feet. You get a little foot bath. Oh, man, it was great.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't gone back again because I'm
sure
not going to pay that kind of money.
Right.
But if somebody gives it to me for free, like I have a friend who's
a
manicure pedicurist.
Right.
She's married to one of my best friends.
Right. And I'm sure you've never gone since.
No, she offers occasionally to do it.
Sure, and you take her up on that.
Actually,
moving on.
She doesn't really. No, I don't take her up on it, frankly, because
mm-hmm.
we're up there to socialize, not
sure.
make her work. It'd be work for her.
Right.
But anyway, so enough on John Edwards. Back to Giuliani. So Giuliani admits that he is pro-life, and then James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family and one of the conservative voices out there now that Jerry Falwell is gone from this earth, gone to his heavenly reward.
Mm-hmm.
Dobson says, no freaking way can I vote for Giuliani.
Oh.
Now, he didn't actually say that.
Oh,
he
no.
said, I will either cast my ballot for an also-ran, or if worse comes to worse, not vote in the presidential election for the first time in my adult life. But he cannot vote for Giuliani.
It's quite an accomplishment.
Well, what's interesting about that is that's trouble for Giuliani, because the question is what percentage of the Republican base, the religious right part of the base, will follow Dobson and say, we care, we want to win, we think Giuliani has a chance to win, but we cannot in good conscience support him, so we're going to go with Newt or somebody like that if Newt ever gets in the race.
I like Newt.
Well, I like Newt as a pundit. Well, not as a pundit. I like to hear him talk occasionally. When he's not being partisan, he's got some decent ideas.
I just like the name Newt.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
They turned me into a Newt.
Mm-hmm.
A Newt.
And then there are the Fig Newtons,
well, I got
which are
better.
Delicious.
Hey, man, you're stepping on my Monty Python lines, you know?
I don't care.
I know you don't. That should be another Monty Python line. By the way, speaking of Newt being partisan, I don't think I'll get to it today. Maybe I'll save it till next week. But he just gave the commencement address on Saturday at the same time George Mason University was having its commencement here and Governor Tim Kaine was speaking.
Rock on.
Newt Gingrich was giving the commencement address at Liberty University where Jerry Falwell is lying in state somewhere, I'm sure, but he hasn't been buried yet. His funeral's tomorrow. He died a week ago.
Right.
But they're keeping him around for a whole week.
What are they doing with the body?
Well, I didn't ask. But
you should.
Oh, I'm sure it's like the Pope's. You know, somebody is as good and true as Jerry Falwell, his body's not decaying.
Cool.
Plus, they probably got him in a deep freeze. But anyway, the reason they kept him around a week is that he died 4 days before Liberty University's commencement. So while they're going through this mourning, Newt is scheduled to come in and give the commencement address. And he basically did an attack on radical secularism. Now, I'm not going to address this here. I'm going to say this much. Secularism is real in this country, and there are radicals. But in general, secularism is not attacking religion. Now, there's the occasional Christopher Hitchens out there who writes books, as an atheist, who writes a book and attacks believers. But you won't hear me attacking believers, even though I'm not a believer. There's no mileage in it. There's no point to it. People believe whatever they want to believe in life, including what I believe. But secularism makes ground, and the reason it makes ground is since the 1700s, we have learned a lot. The 1700s marked the beginning of the Enlightenment.
Cool.
And the rise of science. And it turns out people understand that empirical evidence and science can explain a lot of things that the church or the Bible said it could explain, but it turns out when you look at the available evidence, and I'm talking about the evidence in the world, the physical evidence on the ground, in the rock strata, and in the galaxies, and in the stars.
I get the point.
And all. When you look at the empirical evidence, science has a better handle on how things operate than does the church or religion. And so over the last 300 years, it's true there's been a rise of secularism. But it's secularism meaning people look to science for answers where they always looked exclusively to the church before. Now they look to the church for spiritual answers and to science for the answers to the problems of the world.
You're absolutely right.
Well, thanks. Anyway, I'll take on Newt maybe next week, maybe another time, about this whole issue of radical secularism. Now, my point is, that secularism is not radical, but
no. As
Stephen Colbert said to George W. Bush at the White House Correspondents' Dinner a year ago, he said, "Mr. President, people say that you should pay attention to the reality on the ground." He said, "But I say, don't do it." And the reason is, reality has a well-known liberal bias.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Independent Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool. Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and I'm here with Margot. And
hi-dee-ho.
Hi-dee-ho, indeed. And Margot, there's a few other things in the news from the candidates. First of all, Hillary had... I mean, we should have done some preparation for this, because everybody else is doing it. I guess that's why I didn't want to bother doing it.
Sure.
Hillary did an online appearance in which she played serious, but she said she wanted advice from everybody who's watching this. And she wanted advice about, quote, one of the most important questions of this campaign, and then one she has agonized over for months. And the question is, what do you think our campaign song should be? Now, people have said, oh, she shouldn't have done this. I think it was an attempt for her to loosen up. It was an attempt for her to look like she could handle banter and be funny and laugh at herself and all of that. But, of course, you know what Republicans and conservatives did. The other side, of course, said, you want a campaign song? I'll give you a campaign song. How about Elton John's The Bitch Is Back? You know, how about, And they go through all these things that to make fun of Hillary. So you knew that was coming, and she probably did too. It's a chance for the other side to poke fun at her. And even the people that like her to poke some fun and pick a song. My Boyfriend's Back is one thing that Chris Matthews suggested, or somebody on his show suggested on Sunday.
Do you have any songs for suggestion?
No, you know, I didn't play that game because it's easy to do. It would be slick, Willy, and I'm just not going to do that. But the ones that that came up. Oh, I think that actually what she did was they selected nine songs and asked them to vote for one of nine. That's the thing. So she's not looking for an open casting because she knew that would be trouble. But people are having fun with that game. But the songs are City of Blinding Lights.
Mm-hmm.
You know who did that?
Yes.
You too?
Of course.
I like that song. I'm a Believer by Smash Mouth. Now, see, I'm a Believer came from the Monkees,
yeah.
As far as Hillary knows.
Yeah.
Hillary don't know Smash Mouth from Potty Mouth, you know?
Okay.
Ready to Burn by the Dixie Chicks. Right Here, Right Now by Jesus Jones. Jesus Jones is 20 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 20 years ago at least. He was early 80s New Wave, I think.
Yeah.
And that's the only four they list here. So I don't know what the other five are. And frankly, I don't care because I'm not going to help Hillary pick her song.
Really? But out of
those
four,
you know what they say?
Like the best?
You know what they say?
The YouTube
you
song?
Can pick your friends and you can pick your songs, but you can't pick your friends' songs.
Okay.
I suppose I'd take the U2 song.
If the Monkees did I'm a Believer, I would do that.
I don't know Smash Mouth version, but I can't imagine
it's
I'd
horrible.
Like it. The original song was horrible.
No, it wasn't.
It would date. Here's the thing. You don't want to date yourself.
You don't want to date yourself.
Who would? yeah, no, you don't. And so the Monkees version would be too old, although that's what baby boomers would remember. But you have to be hip. Now, you can't be too hip. And I think Smash Mouth is too hip for Hillary, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably.
If you think of what Bill went with, he went with Fleetwood Mac, right?
That's appropriate.
Well, it was for a couple of reasons. First of all, everybody in the band had affairs with each other.
Yeah.
Secondly, he went with Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, and that was a great song to go with. A lot of people knew it. It was an upbeat song, and it wasn't tied to the 60s or even the early 70s music. Fleetwood Mac, their heyday was mid-70s to mid-80s, I suppose. So it was old enough that everybody knew the song, but not so old that like a Rolling Stones song or a Beatles song that people would say, aren't you from the 60s? And that's the problem with I'm a Believer. It's, aren't you from the 60s?
That was a weird impersonation.
It wasn't an impersonation. It was just a weird voice. In any case, let's see. The other news on the campaign trail. Let's listen to a clip, actually, because this is John McCain trying to explain, avoiding answering Tim Russert's question about Iraq. Do you think we did the right thing going in? And here's the problem. Bush, McCain, even Hillary can't back off their initial vote to go in because it's been costly and it's cost us a lot of lives and treasure. And to now say it was a mistake, I don't think psychologically they can deal with the fallout. That is, for Bush to admit that he's responsible for this blunder, which most people now see it's a blunder. I saw it before he went in. I like to remind people.
Okay.
For Bush to see it's a blunder would be too awful to come to grips with. So he is in denial, I believe, and so is McCain. So here he is dancing around the issue of knowing what we know now, sort of.
Dance.
Well, that's not it.
We need to be prepared here.
Where? Oh, I know where it is. I know what happened. It's my engineer.
In hindsight, was it a good idea to go into Iraq?
You know, in hindsight, if we had exploited the initial success, which was shock and awe, we succeeded, and we had done the right things after that, all of us would be applauding what we did.
Well, what's stupid about that is that hindsight looks back at the current situation and says, knowing what we know now, what would you do? And he said, in hindsight, if things had been different, then things would be different.
Yes.
Yeah. Explain something to me. But he can't bring himself to answer the question. And this is why McCain won't get the nomination. Now, the conservative sites, the conservatives haven't ever accepted McCain, even though he's the most conservative guy in this race, or the most conservative guy that has a chance to win. Plus, he's supported the war in Iraq. But it's the war in Iraq that is bringing him down. He's not leading the field. He's not winning over independents the way he was 8 years ago.
Yep.
And his problem is Iraq. And he can't bring himself to say it's a mistake, because I think for the same reason that the same problem Bush has, it's too awful to come to grips with to say, no, we were wrong to go in. Now, I also don't have a lot of sympathy for the camp that says we were right to go in, but the Bush administration screwed it up. Because even if they had not made all the colossal mistakes they've made, and we've reviewed them on this show many times, we still had no chance. We had a snowball's chance in hell.
H-E double hockey sticks.
Of going into Iraq and making it work. It just was not in the realm of possibility. The idea you can somehow take 140,000 American soldiers, put them in the Middle East, and everything will be honky-dory makes no sense. Everything we know about nation building and its difficulties, everything we know about the fact that a lot of cultures are simply, the infrastructure is simply not there in a lot of cultures for a democracy. It just, the naivete of the Bush administration and the neocons is really staggering.
It is staggering.
Staggering, I tell thee. Staggering. All right, let's go on. We got another quote here. This is Giuliani, and this is what he's going to build his campaign on, the idea that Democrats aren't fit to lead.
I detect in the Democrats a kind of attempt to go back to a pre-September 11 mentality. And I think it would be...
Oh, I will. This is from the Daily Show. We should hear the rest of this.
Rudy Giuliani was just a marginal figure on the national scene. Widely ridiculed for my autocratic ways, my ego, and Caligula-esque personal life. I think this would be a mistake.
It'd be a mistake to go back to pre-9/11. So Giuliani is fond of saying this, and Brit Hume is another one. He calls himself a newsman. But he weekly makes a statement like that the Democrats are not serious about national security. I'll explain it to you one more time, Britt and Rudy. Not everybody thinks that launching missiles and attacking people is the way to show leadership in the world. I understand we're licking our wounds after 9/11, but lashing out doesn't win friends and influence people.
No, no.
Sober talk and rooting out terrorists wins friends. We had the world with us. The world's not with us now. Whose fault is that? You know, there are people out there arguing we should be attacking Iran next. It doesn't solve the problems. What people fail to understand is that what's going on in the Middle East is that the people feel humiliated, and they have been for decades. Their leaders take the oil money that we give them, and they get rich. And the people get whatever the leaders decide to give them. And meanwhile, there was a poll that came out the other month, and I just saw it recently, done in the Palestinian, the occupied territories of the West Bank. And 47% of children in the West Bank have seen their father roughed up by Israeli security forces. Either detained, held, you know, handcuffed, beaten, or just dominated in some way when they came into the home. And so what kids learn, you know, whenever we have a shooting here or something, we get all these trauma experts and we offer counseling to children. What children over there are learning is that their fathers can't protect them. Okay? And so they grow up knowing fathers can't protect them. Now, look what happens in this country when kids, they don't have a strong enough family structure and the kids join a gang. Or they don't have a strong enough family structure and they just get too palsy with the wrong kids at school and then they start using drugs or something. We have all these influences here. Over there, they have Fatah and they have Hamas. And kids turn 16 and they pick up a gun or they become a suicide bomber. And we say, what's wrong with these people? What's wrong with them is the whole culture feels humiliated. Now, I'm not sure what the answer is in terms of, I don't know how you make them feel better about themselves when they aren't in the right shape to compete economically and all of that. but it doesn't do a lot of good to say the attitude in the red state of mind is that people you have to be tough in the Middle East to get anywhere, and so we have to show how tough we are, and the Israelis have to show how tough we are. Tough hasn't worked. It hasn't solved the problem, and they're not in fear of us. They're resentful. So the blue state of mind says, there's got to be another way. There's got to be a way to talk. You have to be tough, and you have to protect your borders, and you have to stop terrorists. But you don't have to invade countries to convert them to democracy. So that's the basic blue state, red state thing. So when Rudy says Democrats have a pre-9/11 mentality, or Bush and Cheney mocked Kerry last time for saying he would fight a more sensitive war, what Kerry meant was, in a blue state of mind, you look for win-win situations, not just bomb-bomb situations. Meanwhile, Bush may bomb Iran before he leaves office. So where are we? We don't know. We do know this, that this is the end of the Andy Finn Show for tonight. Margo, thanks for being here.
You know, I just want to say that to all the listeners for tolerating me, that's great.
It is great.
And caca.
I will be back next week with another edition of the Andy Finn Show. You can check out my website, andyfinn.us, to read my blogs and pick up other info. In the meantime, do it. Don't doubt it.